From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Regular viewers of RT's flagship program, Crosstalk, may have noticed that there hasn't been a new edition for several weeks. We caught up with the program's host, Peter Lavelle, who is close to the end of his mandated 30-day vacation. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow Wednesday.
Under the Russian labor code, it is obligatory that a full-time employee gets 30 days of vacation a year.
A paid. Month.
It's
dang.
Obligatory.
Wow.
They force you on vacation. Wow. you don't have a choice, okay? So I've done my 30-day stint.
Everybody gets 30 days.
I'm free again. I'm free again.
There you go. Free to go back to work. So let's start with this piece that I saw you posted at on Facebook from the American Conservative. Why Trump's approval numbers won't budge. Robert W. Merry wrote it and says, despite a horrible week, and they talk about Manafort pleading out and the lawyer Cohen with the problems he's got, he's still polling relatively high, and it's because the fight is bigger than just him.
Well, you know, just before we started our conversation here, I looked at a few clips from MSNBC discussing actually the same issue. To their bewilderment, what is wrong with the American people? Well, what they don't understand is that they don't understand why people voted for Donald Trump. They voted for a vision of America that Trump presented. And it has nothing to do with marginal figures, because To the chagrin of the mainstream media is that the American people, by and large, have figured out that all they want to do is take down this president by any means necessary. It has nothing to do with what he says or what he does.
Right.
And I think that if the mainstream media, particularly on the left, did focus on what Donald Trump primarily does, then there would be some issues to discuss. But because they're in the weeds all of the time, and they can't see the trees from the forest of how the American people feel. And I'm not carrying water for Donald Trump now, not at all.
Right.
You and I could talk for hours on end and go issue by issue, and it would be a 50-50 break in many ways, maybe even more negative to some of the policies of the president.
Right.
But that's not what his base looks at.
Right.
And on top of it, everyone, I think, that voted for Donald Trump knew he wasn't a choir boy. It's
really?
Baked in. It's baked in.
Right.
Okay. I mean, here's a guy, a billionaire, and he was able to attract the attention, let's put it that way, because this is a PG plus 13 plus radio. You know, some attractive young women that were quite notable in like men's magazines like Playboy. And I can tell you a lot of people in the heartland where I come from say, wow, I wish I could have been able to do that. See,
right.
It's not a negative, okay? And they didn't vote for him on morality. They voted for him on very specific issues. Jobs, the wall, and ending foreign adventures, military adventures. I mean,
yeah.
It's really quite simple.
Yeah. Yeah, the, you know, for me, there were watching the you know, the things that came out of his mouth over the course of the election cycle. I was kind of mystified when I first started him take the positions that he did on foreign policy. You know, here in New York, we know Donald Trump, and you know, I'm somebody that's been active in dealing with development and housing, and you know, these kinds of issues locally, like regionally in New York, metropolitan New York area. Donald Trump, as a developer of large projects, sometimes we were on opposite sides of the microphone at public hearings and things, or his people, and on one side and me and ours on the other, you know, as an adversary. This is a guy that's, you know, going to come in and he's going to build this gentrification-inducing project and it has to be stopped at all costs and blah, 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 blah. But looking at his foreign policy, I assumed it would be conventional Republican foreign policy, and instead he starts with, well, maybe NATO is an expense that we don't need, and it serves no purpose because the enemy that it was created to address is gone. Obvious, it's absolutely true, by the way, and obvious to any observer that is looking at it honestly, but unspoken and almost a sacrilege to say it, and it was treated that way. Likewise with the ideas of you know, the whole R2P thing, the right to invade other countries and to, you know, bring them democracy and build them a nation, and nation building, and the whole regime change thing. He said basically that is bad. Then the whole, you know, on the one hand, you know, he's America first and America is a wonderful country and all of that, which is what they all say in one way or another. But he also admitted, this is another thing apparently that was a sacrilege, when they said, well, Putin's a murderer, Bill O'Reilly. He said, well, a lot of murderers, do you think our hands are clean too? Yeah. You know, so these kinds of things coming out of his mouth were novelties in the public discourse. And I was surprised to see at the RNC that they resonated with the Republican base there.
You know, this is what makes it really interesting. Again, let's look at CNN and MSNBC. They like to portray everything that's going on is that it's a open-minded, tolerant left, as opposed to a closed-minded, bigoted, backward-looking right. They get this all wrong because for the very reason what you just said is that Donald Trump has challenged some of the pillars of the orthodoxy of America's hegemony in the world.
Right.
That's what Michael Morell and people like that, you know, former acting director of the CIA coming out, Clapper, Hayden, all these other people, this is sacrilege. You cannot question these sanctimonious pillars of American foreign policy. And that's what got him in a lot of trouble with the media, because the media is the sounding board for foreign adventures. They've never disliked a war, okay? It's always great for ratings, okay? Right. And all those beautiful missiles, okay? That's a gravy train for them. Unfortunately, on this very recent topic that we're talking about, is that I see Donald Trump actually buckling to the deep state. The rumors swirl, though you won't find it on MSNBC and CNN, that the U.S. may be planning another strike on Syria. You won't see that anywhere, okay? But what was it? MSNBC for an entire year did not even mention the crisis in Yemen.
Right.
That is American-backed, funded, logistics provided, etc. PR cover, etc.
Right.
Okay, not one word over the course of an entire year. How many Stormy Daniels stories did they give you?
Right.
Okay. So, but let's go back to Mary's article. This is something that really has put a lot of pollsters into a quandary, because as he points out in this article, there was a coalition of the ascendant. It was going to be minority groups. It was going to be women, sexual minorities, immigrants. This was a growing coalition that would forever move the needle of American politics. And you and I, on this edition of your podcast, and we can do it for time infinitum, but, you know, can we ever really trust the polls anymore?
No,
okay,
no,
because
no, no.
They really dug themselves a pretty deep ditch in 2016.
Right.
So the point is that I'm much more conservative, and this is what I tell people, is that I don't like dividing people up into boxes, okay? Should we necessarily assume that an African American woman is a Democrat? And I think this is something that we have to wake up to in the wake of 2016. I mean, is it correct to always put people in boxes? Because when I think of politics, I think of policy and I think of values and principles. When you have all of these strategists for the GOP and the Democrats, they're looking at totally different issues, okay? And that's why I think that there's a misreading of the electorate and of the population in general, is because the punditry class is looking at the wrong things, constantly looking at the wrong things and looking for a political advantage instead of looking objectively what's going on. And I think if you objectively simply look at what's going on, you'll get a different reading. And that's why I put that article by Mary on Facebook, because I think it's a fascinating way to look at looking at politics.
Yeah, I agree. Some of the things you're talking about, this ascendant force you're referring to, for example, you know, the belief, according to the author, is that this would usher in a new era of globalism.
Right.
Open borders, identity politics, free trade, cultural individualism, foreign policy interventionism, and gun control. First of all, I think it's a fair statement to make that this was the belief, because I think this is the package that was being sold. But there is nothing intrinsic in any of these elements that necessarily ties them to another. In other words, the idea of cultural individualism. And identity politics, those two things seem, you know, related, but they don't necessarily relate to open borders. Au contraire, you would think that instead borders would be kind of hardened around these individual, you know, identities. Globalism and gun control. Well, okay, if the United States is going to practice gun control, doesn't it sell more arms around the world than everybody else combined? You know, there are things that are contradictions among each of these elements, and yet the belief is, and the package was being sold, that they all go together. The reason for that, of course, is that there's an elite constituency that benefits from each of these elements that have reached, and perhaps membership is the same, you know, among that class for all of them. So this is, we make money on each of these things, so go sell them.
Yeah, but I'm not in that club.
Right, exactly.
And so, I'm not invited.
And so, the people that are out here supposed to buy it, some of us, however we come to it, if you come to it from the right or the middle, I come to it from the left, say, you know what? That's not for me. Okay? I don't think we should be doing foreign policy intervention, for example.
That's my very point, is that if we just took all of the elements that you just mentioned, how many people are actually, all of them, right, all of those elements, how many people are fit all of them at the same time?
Right.
I don't think all that many,
right.
Okay? Look, globalism, whatever that means, and that's something obviously the elites promote because it's to their advantage. I don't think the average person really knows what that means. But if you talk about hemorrhaging jobs, the lack of border control, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm so far away from it, Don. But you know the whole hoopla about separating families at the border. I mean, I just couldn't get my head around that. That's been going on for decades. It just didn't happen.
Right. That's right.
Okay. Number two, and this will maybe disturb or upset some of your audience here, is that, well, if there was a wall there, then nobody would get separated. I'm sorry to sound so simplistic, but that is true.
Right.
All right? I mean, I've known many, many people in my life in a variety of countries that have gotten citizenship in a different country because they went through the rules. They went through the process. It's not easy. It's work. It's paperwork. It's money. Sometimes you need a lawyer. But they do it legally, and I'm absolutely open to that. And I'm going to sound like Bob Dole yelling at kids on his lawn, you know, like get off the grass, you know. But I think every country needs to have an immigration policy based on merit.
Well,
this is not the 1890s. It's not the 1900s where you just needed brawn and numbers.
Right.
We don't need that. We need smart people. Okay? I mean, they should set up a huge visa center in China and in India. We want all of your mathematicians and physicists. Okay? We're going to help you. We need this kind of intellectual muscle. All right? Because I taught at the University of California for a number of years. I'll tell you, again, I'm going to call it straight here, a lot of middle-class white kids just don't like physics, don't like chemistry, don't like math, okay? And every single institute across academia that has studies at the end of it should be completely disbanded because you're not creating workers of the future. You're creating whiners of the future, okay? Sorry,
you know,
my little rant before I go back to work.
And of course, people should understand you are actually an immigrant in Russia. You're an American that now lives in Russia, and you went through the rules.
I have to go through all of the rules here, and there's no exception. They don't pamper anyone. You know, I mean, the thing is that I think, and that's a criticism I have of immigration in Russia, is a lot of people want to come here, but they don't make it easy.
Yeah.
And if you caught overstaying your visa, God help you. Oh, my God. See, this is the difference, as I always tell people, is that you're left alone by the state, but if you get into the Russian criminal justice system, God help you, okay?
Yeah.
Because it's not nice. And so, that's why most people keep their nose clean,
yeah, right.
Because you get into the system, they mark it on your papers. Anytime you want to get a job, they know where you can't lie about it. It's there, all right? Mm. That's a deterrent in itself, okay?
Yeah.
You can't hide from your past.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that galls me really here, the things that are driving people to, you know, rush to the border, the, you know, the southern border, in particular the United States, and also the airports, because folks coming from Middle East and Africa, are wars being conducted by the United States in their home countries, whether it's a coup d'etat in Honduras or a legal coup in Peru or a coup in Ukraine or a war anywhere in Central Africa, North Africa, Middle East. You know, people are being driven out of their homes. You mentioned Yemen. You know, have 9 million people that are, you know, two glasses of water away from death. And people come here, you know, in an emergency created by the U.S. government. And rather than the U.S. government solving it by, A, stopping the destruction of their countries and remediating the situation in their country, and B, rationalizing immigration, which should have been done generations ago, we have this situation where there's constant tension that undermines labor markets, that leaves the people who come here in a precarious legal situation so they can be carted away at a moment's notice. Not exactly the kind of environment you want to create for anybody in your country, because it means they can create it for you. It's a benefit to the elite all the way around. They get to blow up anybody they want and then do what they like with what shakes out of it.
You know, it all gets down to one really simple equation here. It's the politics of your zip code. You're absolutely right, Don. All of the effects of these illegal, immoral wars, they're not even wars because nothing is ever won.
Right.
The only thing that ever happens is destruction and misery. And people want to escape it. They go to Europe. Europe is having a really big problem grappling with it. It's happening to the United States. And it's when you live in a privileged zip code, well, none of those negative effects ever impact you, do they?
Right.
Okay?
That's right.
You never see it. Maybe you'll get a Honduran nanny to take care of your child, okay? Maybe
right.
That's it, okay?
That's right.
But, you know, or in some cases in near the southern border, agricultural workers. But for the rest of the people, they have to absorb the consequences of what the elites do.
Right.
Because, yes, war is a very, very profitable thing. John McCain, what was it? What was the arms maker that wrote the obituary for John McCain that was a real flop? I don't remember which one of the...
Like McDonnell Douglas, one of the big
one of the big evil ones, and they just said the truth. You know, they basically said you made a lot of money for us, John. We're gonna miss you.
Yep.
Okay, I mean, really.
Yeah, well, meanwhile, while you're on that topic, there's
oh no, here we go.
I saw this first. I saw it just go by, not from RT reporting on it, but the actual piece. That a column in the Washington Post that claimed that McCain was a human rights champion, and in particular, he was a champion of minority rights, and illustrating the picture, they had him with Oleg Tanabuk, who from Svoboda, an actual neo-Nazi. He's standing next to a neo-Nazi as a hero of human rights, and this is a neo-Nazi he'll put in power.
You know, the whole death saga of John McCain, I have more or less abstained because I have certain principles. I'm not going to spit on a dead man, okay? John McCain was simply an awful person, an awful politician, and his impact was so negative, it's hard to even comprehend one person could do that. But I'm not going to get into the, you know, the parade of, you know, he should burn in hell and all this. You know, I just refuse to do that. Just look at the record. And I'm glad you brought up that picture, because it's people like us that point out what the picture actually is about. Okay. And that's what we need to do. We don't need to go around on his grave. We need to say, you see what he illegally went into Syria. He was had himself photographed with people that were the specific people he was photographed with were involved in kidnapping Shia, not Sunni, citizens of Syria. And who knows what they were doing to them after they were kidnapped. So this is the kind of human rights advocate that John McCain was. But the thing is that when you look at, you know, from Fox all the way to MSNBC, this kabuki theater about John McCain was just sickening to me.
Yeah.
It's really sickening. And it's a reflection. Again, we're, you know, are you for Trump, against Trump?
I mean, exactly.
This mantra here. You know, yeah. It's really about who we are as a nation. And what we're willing to accept in the name of these elites that do things that Americans are barely aware of what's done in their name. And John McCain was the flag bearer for the worst parts of American hegemony in his time in high politics.
Yeah, this one. And here's a tweet that somebody
he's
names.
He's a hero. I mean, really.
Afghanistan, Bosnia, Honduras, Iran, Iraq, Libya, Nigeria, North Korea, Serbia, Sudan, Syria, Russia, Ukraine.
Yep.
McCain on the wrong side of all of them from the human rights perspective.
Yeah, but you have to see. This is what makes the U.S. public sphere akin to Pol Pot. You have to nod your head and say yes. Right. You must do it, or there'll be consequences.
Yeah.
That's what it is. There's an authoritarian mindset already so well established in the public sphere, where I know I've had, and I will keep them for my memoirs. I will I will cross out the names of people that have written me messages that they no longer can appear on Crosstalk because of the consequences they would face at work. Mm. Okay, and a number of really, really great, great people, and they wrote in great detail. And I'm the type of person who would never release that to the public. I would redact their name maybe in the future to make sure no one knew what their identity was. But this is the kind of atmosphere. If there's a legacy for John McCain, that's it.
Yeah.
The authoritarian groupthink about foreign policy and America's role in the world today, that's his legacy.
Yeah. And you got, meanwhile, again, the Washington Post, Max Boot today.
Oh, great.
Republicans rejected McCain and embraced Trump. What does that say about them? And for me, it actually makes me want to reevaluate them and say, hey, maybe they're not so bad after all.
Well, the thing is that, again, I mean, John McCain, see, we play around with these ridiculous labels, Democrat, Republican. The further you go up the pecking order, there's no difference among them, okay?
Yep.
Really.
Yep.
This is kabuki theater, you know. That's what it is. I mean, Max Boot has the amazing living legacy of being wrong about everything that he's ever said professionally. He is on the top of the pantheon there. He's number one. I mean, he's got the gold medal. He's got the Oscar for having the worst crystal ball in American foreign policy. Congrats, Max.
Yeah. Nice work. There should be an award for that somewhere. So meanwhile, with some of the things that are going on around the world, I assume you've been watching them for when you get back to work on, I guess, tomorrow, right? The 30th is your... Yep. What are we looking at with Crosstalk when you jump back into the saddle?
Well, a couple of days ago, we had Macron of France, and you had, I think, the German defense minister coming out saying they have to start reassessing the security relationship with the United States, something I've been predicting for a long time with the advent of Trump. I want to mull that a bit. A little bit about John McCain's legacy. I've been very interested in what's been going on in South Africa recently. I'm very glad that the South African government is backtracking on the seizure of lands without compensation, primarily of white farmers. I think that, you know, we have the left in America is just an abdication of responsibility. And I remember the apartheid movement very, very well. I was a student at UC Davis. That was our issue. And I agreed with it, okay, because I believed in protecting minorities and not defining everything through race, okay? And now we have a government in South Africa that is betraying that completely. And Western media is just loath to point it out. But just enough people did. I did over at the Duran with my colleagues there. And I think that collectively, the people on YouTube, we kind of moved the needle because it's just wrong. I mean, that is what is being done to African Boer farmers is racism. And just say it. I know it's uncomfortable for people of the left to say that about South Africa, but it is not the rainbow nation that their propaganda wants to say it is. Okay, it's a very, very complicated thing, and I've made it very clear that there's the legal concept of eminent domain. If a political decision is made to seize these lands, they must be compensated at market value. If it's so important as a political imperative, there are ways of doing it. Don't kill them. Don't run them off the land. We all know that's wrong. The ultimate implications for South Africa is horrendous. Without the rule of law, there will not be foreign investment. No one will want to buy those farms because you'll lose it because there's no rule of law. These farms are very heavily indebted into banks. The banking system could take a major hit. And that's on top of all the other problems that South Africa has. I hope that the left would think this one through, okay?
I'm just wondering.
I'm called a racist by some people on YouTube for saying what I just said.
I understand why that sounds like that to some people, because they don't understand much about the actual situation in South Africa. Because the political situation, for example, isn't even that clear. This isn't the ANC that's advocating this, okay? And the ANC...
Well, there are elements of the ANC, and it has come from
youth,
that.
The youth.
And their allies, okay? I'm not going to let the ANC off the hook on this.
No, I'm not talking about who's on the hook and who's not. You have... Here's the situation, and I don't know if we have enough time to go through this whole subject really fairly, but, you know, the situation is such that it's something that exists around the world in a post-colonial world where the colonial powers and their heirs who remain end up with, you know, they stole the wealth at the beginning of the colonial period and they gave it to their own. And the successors to a lot of them.
No, Don, the ownership issue is extremely complicated. In some cases, it was just settlers where no one made a claim to the land. In some cases, land was bought. There are documents of this. In some cases, land was taken through force. But the point is, and some of that land that was taken through force has been returned, okay? But African tribes took land from other African tribes through the use of force. So we need the rule of law. You just can't say it was stolen. That's not good enough.
We need to have
the rule of law and to adjudicate it in a fair way where everyone's interests are recognized, respected, and adjudicated. And it can be done. But you don't need this blind ideology. They just stole the land and they're white. That is a recipe for disaster for South Africa.
And that's
these
not-
farmers, 9% of these farmers feed South Africa. They feed South Africa. You take them away, you have Zimbabwe.
Okay, now.
And I'm not trying to favor anyone over another. I'm looking at South Africa as a whole, because you want a refugee crisis, you need international food aid going into a country that actually can produce large amounts of food. We don't need this reckless behavior. It needs to be thought out. And I know it's a really special issue for some members of the government, some members of the ANC and others. It does whip people up into a fury. But it's not going to solve South Africa's problems.
And I would really like to get into this, maybe do a whole piece about it. I am not advocating, certainly, anything that would end up destroying the agricultural sector in South Africa, which would be suicide for those people and for anyone, for the world markets or tanking the banks or anything else. And as a matter of fact, coming to the question of land ownership and speaking in my area of expertise over the 40 some odd years I spent in the title insurance business. And I know you have great expertise in terms of finance. And I think we'd have a very interesting conversation about it.
Yeah, let's do that
because we're out of time. We'll do that next time we speak.
We just have to recognize and respect everyone's interests.
Absolutely true. I agree. Okay, Peter, thank you so much. A pleasure as always.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.